Excuse me, I still have a nasty cold. So my voice might disappear. This organizational meeting of the Hudson Common Council for the year 2022 is now in session. Tracy, will you please call the roll? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Sorry.
We can hear you, Tom.
Oh. Tracy, are you there? Where is she?
Oh, there she is.
I'm sorry. Alderman Anthony.
Yes. Totally. Hi.
Beth Aludi.
Hi.
Chris? Here.
Grantee.
He's listed here, but I don't. Dominic?
I heard him.
Dominic? You're muted, Dominic.
Here?
There you go.
Thank you. Morris?
Here.
Roni?
Here.
Farr?
Here.
Walker? Wallace?
Here.
Present DiPietro.
Here.
Forum present.
You've all, Shaheen, could you post the 2022 rules of order, please?
That wouldn't be the document you sent me earlier, would it?
No, but you get it from the documents on the website. Well, under the organizational meeting, not under the informal meeting. Well, while we're waiting for that, can I have an introduction, please?
I'll introduce.
Ryan, and a second, please.
I'll second.
Was that Dominic?
Art, I believe.
I'm sorry, who? Art?
Art.
Okay, thank you. Yes?
Sorry to ask a question, but in terms of the rules of order, is this a time that we ask for an amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we're discussing them, yes.
Okay, thank you. Let me know. Thank you.
Okay, well, now is the discussion. We've introduced the second.
Great. So I'm wondering if we could add something into the rules of order that any council member with prior notification can request a reasonable accommodation. Now, of course, we know reasonable accommodation could mean many things depending on what the need is, but I would like to put that in the rules of order if possible.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? To request what?
Reasonable accommodation. You know, this is to for any council member that would need a reasonable accommodation, whether it be for a disability, whether it be for translation and language, whatever the need might be individually, the member could, with a written notice, request that reasonable accommodation.
Okay. Now, when you say reasonable accommodation, is that a term of art that that is understood to mean all those things you just said?
Well, a reasonable accommodation basically means because it's individualized, the accommodation could be many things. It's up to that written notice what that accommodation could be.
Right. I understand that. But in terms of putting it in the document, if we say just reasonable accommodation, will that imply all that you've said?
In an employment setting, it does, Tom.
That okay. Is- thank you, Margaret. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Okay.
Quick question.
Yes.
Just a point of observation. And Dominic, I'm sure you're better versed in this than I, but wouldn't reasonable accommodation fall under part of like our status as citizen, city employees?
Generically, yes, but because of the process and plus we don't have an HR department, I think this allows us, a city official, especially the council member, because of the nature of the information and documentation or whatever that need may be. But, of course, anyone could go the legal route, but I think that would just drag it out, make it more complicated.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think personally I would be 100% in favor of making sure that every council member and every citizen really has what they need to be successful.
Okay, let's have an amendment to add reasonable accommodation as rule number 15. Can I have an introduction for that amendment?
Do on.
And a second.
I will. Thank you.
Margaret. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the amendment carries. Any further discussion before we vote on the rules of order?
Tom, I had a question.
Okay.
I went back to the rules of order, and I know that these were discussed by the last council, but the incoming council mm-hmm. did not get to discuss these rules of order. So in the last council, rule number 4 related to standing committees. And at some point during that council, those standing committees were abolished. Then at a later date, I think towards the end of 2020, the legal committee was reestablished. I think that's the only standing committee at the moment. I'm not sure. So the current rules of order do not have any standing committees. Do we intend to abolish the legal committee?
No. But that committee membership committee arrangements are usually not part of the rules of order. We will get to that.
The only reason I raised it was rule number 4 in the last iteration of this meeting 2 years ago. The standing committees were listed.
Yes, you're right. You're right. No, unfortunately, because of my illness, I haven't had a chance to really set up the committee arrangement for this coming year, but it'll be in place by our formal meeting, I promise. And we will talk about what's left, what committees will be or will not be brought back, including various ad hoc committees.
So do you have, right now, do you have any sense of which committees you want to see coming back?
Well, absolutely, the legal committee will be back.
Okay. I think that's, of the ones listed from 2020, I believe that's the only one that really came back.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. So,
and then I did have another question.
Okay.
Any question about committees?
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was discussed in December, and it relates, if you could scroll down to the minority-majority appointments.
Yes. Shaheem, could you do that, please, to number 14? You'll notice there was one line taken out.
I didn't go back and prove which line
about no party status.
Okay, so what is the situation with no party right now?
It would mean that if someone was no party, they would be the minority. They were the
that
only.
Thank you. That was exactly what I wanted to bring up. Okay, so that's good. That was the only question I had.
And it was removed.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Other than that, I did not have any other questions.
Okay. I'm sorry. Anyone else? It's almost comical, my voice. So, Tracy, can we have a roll call vote on the rules of order, please?
Alderman Anthony.
Aye.
Vesaludi.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ferranti.
Aye.
Warren.
Margaret. I'm not sure she heard you, Tracy.
Alderman Morris.
Green.
Roney.
Aye.
Bauer.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
President DiPietro.
Aye.
Harry.
Thank you, Tracy. Here's Malachi. Malachi is there. Okay. Last bit of business. I'm pleased to announce that the caucus, which is basically all of us, since we're all registered Democrats, met last Friday night and elected Dominic as a majority leader and Dominic Moranti as our majority leader and Ryan Wallace as our minority leader. And with that, this organizational meeting comes to a close. Stay tuned because we'll be having our regular meeting immediately after. So can I have an introduction and a second to adjourn this part, this meeting?
Duan,
and a second, please. Ryan. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Okay, this meeting is over. But stay right where you are.
Excuse me, President DiPietro?
Yes, Tracy.
Did Alderman Walker vote on the amended rules of order?
That's a good
yes. I was not aware that he was in attendance.
No, he didn't.
But I.
Thank you. Thank you.
Excuse me. Okay. Now we switch clerks. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Linda, are you up and ready? Thank you. So begins the informal meeting of January 10th, 2022. Copies of the draft minutes of December 21st meeting have been provided to the council members and have been posted on the city website. Committee reports received, copies of reports received from committees have been provided to the council members and have also been posted on the city website. Among our communications so far for this month is a letter from Tracy submitting a record of annual completion of training by members of the planning and zoning boards. And with that, we can begin our department reports. Now, I know Tim Hutchins can't be here tonight. Is Nick here? Let's see. Nick Pirro? Or anyone from Fire? I think not. So we'll skip right to the youth department. Liz York, you're up. There you go.
Hello. Nice to see everybody. I'm going to try to share my screen again because it was such a success last time. Can I do it? All right. In December, we were able to work with Friends of Hudson Youth and get donations from the Dollar Tree in Greenport and the Hudson Farmers Market. And with that support, we were able to help three local families for the holidays. We provided them with Christmas presents for their kids and with all of the ingredients they needed for a full Christmas dinner. We don't have any pictures of the families enjoying the gifts or the dinner, but we did get to spend some time with staff working together to get everything prepared and ready, and that was really nice, put us all in the holiday spirit. We were able to hand out a large number of the N95 masks that were provided us by City Hall, but we still do have more to give out, so if anyone in the city needs any, we have them at the youth center. Just stop by any youth day between 8 and 5, and there should be someone on site who can ring the doorbell, or you can call the number at the youth department, 828-0017, and set up a time. And we'll be happy to help provide more of those to the community. Upfield updates. I don't know how many of you guys have been able to get over there. Oakdale's still beautiful in the snow and ice. However, the ice on the lake is very thin. It is not safe to walk on. It is not safe to be on. It is not safe to skate on, and skating is not permitted. So there are some signs around the area to say to stay off the ice, to make sure that for your own safety and for the safety of others, people aren't going out on the ice and you aren't going out on the ice. The trails are still accessible, even with the weather we've been having. There are some areas that are slick, so I would definitely use caution if you go on the hike, but they are still usable and passable, so hopefully people are still able to get out there. Youth Center programs, and so as we move into 2022, we are working on setting ourselves up for the entire year as much as that is feasible, and looking into how we're going to divide programming through fall, spring, summer, winter. And so we're starting to contact our programmers and get some ideas. We'll have some contracts to be reviewed by the council in the next month. And we're really excited to just be proactive with that. And we've got a lot of great programmers who are interested in joining us. We also have some ideas around virtual programming. It's something that has become a necessity for kids and organizations. And we're hoping to use it not just as that necessity, but as an actual tool for connection that is used whether we're completely remote or not. We've got some really great ideas that we're working through as a department. Hopefully we'll be able to start those up in the next week. And so we'll keep you guys posted either here at these meetings or on our social media pages. But we're really excited about that. And as soon as I have some concrete details about what's coming down the pipe first, I will let you guys know. I talk about virtual programming because COVID has kind of had a little bit of a resurgence in the area, although it never went away. For those of you that have been staying up to date on how the youth department has been managing, we have had several shutdowns because of potential exposures, and because, you know, we work with kids who are in school and then they come to us, and it's just a lot of risk in having the number of kids we have. And so when there is a potential exposure, it's not worth it to us to stay open and risk further exposure. We shut down to keep them safe. And unfortunately, we have had to do a lot of that. So even this evening, we had to close our doors again because there was an exposure, and because a number of our staff were affected, we didn't have enough staff left to open safely with the number of kids we have. The way it's been going is not sustainable for us to open and then close and then open and then close. Our families can't depend on us, and we can't provide the type of programming we want to be able to provide. And a lot of it is a lot of minutes because of the nature of the program. And so discussing it with the mayor and the commissioner and the department, we decided that it's best for everybody and safest for everybody if we pause our programming until the spring. That's just something that, while we don't want to do it, it's going to make the staff have to do it, but feels necessary at this moment in order to keep our staff and our community as safe and healthy as we can. As I previously said, we are working on virtual programming and have been doing so. And so this will be a great opportunity to get that out and to start sharing it and take that to the level that we want to take it to. As soon as we have a schedule, we'll be able to share it. We'll share it here at the meeting. We'll share it on our social media sites, and we'll do the best we can to get it out as much as we can. While staffing is limited this week because of the staff that can't come in, we do recognize that just immediately shutting down would set up our families for failure and being able to find alternate arrangements for their kids. So we will be open for the rest of the week. We're going to have some people on the floor doing direct care that don't usually, just make sure we can stay open, myself included. So we'll be out there, you know, there for some programming, but I'm usually not there from 1 to 9, and I will be for the programming in order to keep it open this week while people figure things out. If there's any changes to that, if there's any reopening that comes sooner, as soon as there's schedules or programming or anything, we're going to be as clear and direct as we can with communication so that everybody's aware, so that as soon as we can start doing in-person, on-site programming, we are. And hopefully that comes sooner rather than later, but we're prepared for whatever we need to be doing. And with this time, it also gives us time to intentionally interview and set up for the position that was confirmed at the last meeting. I know that there's a lot of new council members, so you weren't all a part of this decision, but the last formal meeting, the food and nutrition coordinator position was approved for us, and it's a position that's been in the works at the very least since June, has been discussed by previous staff as well. And it's just something that is really going to take our program into the next level and allow us to provide for the community in a way that we hadn't yet been able to. So I'm really excited about that. And I think that this will be a good opportunity to be intentional about and take time to find the right fit rather than jumping into something just to have this position filled. So, you know, silver lining, this is wherever you can find them. And that is all I have, because we have been managing with the shutdowns, and we haven't had kids on set. I'd like to give you more photos of the programs we've been doing. Unfortunately, we had shut down right before the holidays because of a couple positive cases with our community, and then we were open for a week, and then this week, you know, we had the shutdown come in, unfortunately. So it's not a report that I like to be giving. It's not a report that I want to give, but I think that we are going to take it and make the best of the situation. And I'm really genuinely excited about the possibilities and opportunities we have with the virtual programming and the level that we can take it to. I think a lot of kids, for better or worse, are engaging through technology. And if we can reach our community in that way, as well as in person, and then we have that, you know, when we do have to go remote, it's not like we're just creating something just to create it. We have content that we've created to share that's intentional and is meeting, you know, it's meeting the expectations of the program in our community when we do it. So,
hey Liz, before shutting down at all, are there any impacts?
Hold on, Ryan. I haven't called for questions yet. Maya, did you want to add something?
I would like to just say hello to all of the returning and new council members. Council, looking forward to working with you in the mayor's office for another 2 years. And also very much wanting to thank Liz and Calvin and the mayor's office for all the immediate work that's happening around this COVID situation and serving our families and children. It's obviously a very difficult situation to be navigating, but I'm really looking forward to us all working together on really kind of thinking about this in the long term and what does this look just for programming in general. So as Liz said, silver linings.
Okay, thank you, Maya. Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah, no, Liz, are there any food programs that are impacted by the closure? Like, in which case, if there are any kids that were getting any sort of food assistance through it, what can we do if you guys don't have a plan yet? I mean, like, can we help with pickups, deliveries, centralized drop-offs or anything, just to make sure that that part's not disrupted?
Yeah, we do provide a snack and a meal every single day for the kids that are participating in our program. And I know that food distribution is something that the department did well before I joined. And so it's definitely going to be something that we're going to be helping people sign up for, figuring out what that looks like. And we probably will be able to use some help with deliveries and such. So once we have the plan, we'll reach out and see who's willing and able to support that for sure.
Please share that with us so we can pitch in too. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Council member.
Liz, do you have any estimate on, I know you said March, but do you have any estimate when you'll be able to open again, or are you going to evaluate sometime in February, depending on what the situation is?
Yeah, March is the goal because it feels like it gets us into a space where we can start to be a little bit outside and be a little bit safer. But we're going to constantly reevaluate. So I think it's like every week we're going to be looking at what the options are, if there's a potential to come back sooner, or if we have to pause further.
Yeah.
Vicky has her hand up, I'm happy to say.
I was wondering for the kids that don't have computers. Do you provide any? Or how can they get connected? Or shall we put together a program?
Yeah. Accessibility is one of the things that is a point of concern. I know that a lot of kids have resources because the schools have gone remote. So we have some resources that we can share with families as well because of the tech programs that we do run at the youth center. And so, you know, it is something that came down the line relatively recent. And so we have to check our resources and see where we might need some support in providing technology access. And I think that we'll be able to provide the majority of our families. And again, if not, we'll certainly reach out and see what we as a community can do. If
you need to. Well, let us know if you have an issue with that. Also, one more other thing. Since you're going to be closed from now until you open again, and that's a good time for you to interview for the nutritionist coordinator, I was wondering, where does your department get the food, the produce? Is it from food banks or local or like organic farms?
We get some food in the farming season is donated to us from local farms. Letterbox Farm donates a lot of stuff to us. They donated chickens for us to share with the community and with our families. We try to do as local as we can. We also do the food bank out of Latham, helps provide us with a fair amount of the snacks and stuff that we provide. And then the rest of it, we shop at local grocery stores.
If you need any elders to help you with, you know, sourcing good quality produce, let us know.
That'd be great. I think that's one of the plus sides to filling the food and nutrition coordinator. We can have someone focusing on that and working with the resources we have to provide more local, more organic, more sustainable. I mean, I'm really excited about that. So yeah,
thank you, Liz.
I'm going to be in touch.
Council members, any more questions for Liz? Dwan.
Just a comment.
Sorry, Dwan had his hand up first.
Yeah, hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm just wondering how many family and kids are you dealing with now? I mean, on this pandemic time.
Yeah, well, we had over
80.
I think 80 kids sign up for the program, and then fewer came initially. But then every time we've had to shut down, we've had fewer and fewer kids come back. And I think it is because families can't go from having this after-school opportunity to not having it and then having it again, realistically. And so, unfortunately, we have been lowering. And I think we've been getting about, this last time, last week after the third shutdown, we only got about 15 kids for the evening. The teams were picking back up because the gym was open again, but just the inconsistency and the lack of reliability in that is just not something that parents and families can rely on. So it has dwindled a little bit.
One more question. You're using the shuttle to go to youth center, or you just school bus dropping off? How the kids coming to the, you know, youth center?
We have busing from the school to the youth center through, I think it's through the school. And then after the program is over, we have busing from the youth department to the homes or various drop-off points through the county.
Thank you, Liz.
Okay, Art.
Just a thank you. You know, it's one of those things where I think that, you know, No organizations have really had to navigate something like this before, you know, and I know that this is like the whole pandemic thing has gone on for a long time, but, you know, the opening, the closing, it's just really, really challenging. And I just want to commend the entire department's efforts on like really working to put together like some sustainable and really helpful programming that really impacts a lot of kids. So thank you for that.
Okay. anyone from the public? Please raise your hand. It's much easier to control the meeting that way. Okay, I don't see any other hands. Thank you, Liz and Maya.
Thank you very much.
We'll move along to, let's see if she's here. Yes, she is. Heather.
Hello.
Hi, the finance report.
Yes, let me share my screen. Make it short and sweet tonight. We continue to be resource challenged, so I just tried to pull some of the most important issues out for now. Okay, so just some interesting news on ARPA. I know none of you follow this as religiously as I do, but the goalposts keep moving. And in this case, they've actually moved in a very positive direction for us. Last week, they adopted what they call the final rule, the Treasury. It takes effect on April 1st, but it's actually much more flexible and much more simple. We basically had already sort of made the decision, and it's not obviously written in stone, but I had already done the financial analysis that showed that we could, in fact, use all of our ARPA funds to offset our loss in revenues. One of the changes has made that exponentially more clear, and we don't have to worry about that analysis anymore because they're now offering a standard allowance of $10 million in loss, which is far more than we lost and also far more than we got in ARPA revenue. But what that means is if there was ever any question, there is now no longer a question at all that it can just be used for government services. That does not mean we're required to do that, but it does mean that we are able to do that. Also probably not impactful to anybody except my office. The reporting requirements are apparently going to be more streamlined, so that's great. Anything that was done prior to the date of the final rule, they're basically saying, okay, technically the final rule doesn't take effect until April 1st, but anything that happened before that is going to be judged against the final rule as opposed to the interim rule, and the interim rule was more constrained. So that's all good news for us in terms of our ability to use our ARPA funds the way that we would like to. And the reporting requirements on that stay the same. We did receive, and we talked about this last month, we did receive a draft formal city accrual policy. We have still not set up a time to review that, but I hope to be able to do that in the next few months with the appropriate people. We were able to finalize the 2020 audit. It was completed and published to Emma within the deadline, so that was exciting. It's also available on the city website. It is, for those people who go and read the audits, it's going to look substantially different. GFOA, which is the Government Finance Officers Association, and GASB, which is another acronym, but basically GASB continues to create rules that change how they want to see things reported. So this year being 2020, is going to require a significant amount of restating, which you will see in the audit, but that's also going to require a significant amount of restating in terms of the city's general ledger system and how things are recorded. So we're in the midst of trying to determine all of that. And as I said before, I'm keeping my tax collection software up here because we are, and I think next month I will have a screenshot for the tax collection software that we're currently using. It is circa 1998, and I used to say it was DOS-based until I was corrected, and it's actually pre-DOS. So, resolutions. The only one that I have been involved in that I'm aware of is a resolution for Pocketbook Factory Hudson, who has donated money through in order to provide traffic radar speed display, so you'll see that one.
Heather?
Yes.
Can I just interrupt you there since you kind of broke the news early? I just want to congratulate this donation came about through the efforts of Vicky Descaludi, who approached the Pocketbook Factory because of their involvement with Glenwood Boulevard, which is where both traffic radar speed displays will be employed. Sorry for interrupting you. I just, since you kind of...
No. Thank you for doing that. That's okay. Awesome. And I was pretty sure it was Vicky, but I didn't want to misstate in case I was wrong. So I appreciate you actually clarifying that.
Great. Please continue.
Okay, so our basic budget reviews, these are actuals through December, but of course they never are because we always have chargebacks. It takes, depending on the category, it can take 1 or 2 up to literally 3 months before we know what the literal revenue is. But this will give you a ballpark idea. And I see that my charts have been cut off again because I'm using a free, cheap Word thing on my home computer to do this. So I will make sure it's better for next time. But you can see the most important things right now, which is that on an off-street parking, that's really only 3/4 at this point in time. So we're already at 102 versus 150. I feel pretty confident we will come close to that budget number by the time we have all those numbers in. The column that I added that you can't see is what the 2022 budget is, just to give an idea of how aggressive or unaggressive we were. The 2022 budget was about 100. It was 140,000. I think that's going to be a reasonable estimate. The Front Street Municipal Lot, as we've seen, it definitely took a toll with COVID. It's coming back a little bit, but not as much as we had hoped. And although you can't see it because it's cut off, I believe the estimate in that case was 95,000 for 2022. Mm-hmm. Parking and other permits, we've already beaten that number in terms of our 2021 budget. And I believe the number again was either 50 or 55,000. So we're looking very good on that front, not too aggressive. And in terms of parking tickets, where we had a budget of 350, we blew that away with 406,000. And our 2022 budget estimate was 400,000. So I think that's a pretty solid number as well that we can all be comfortable about. Net, we're up a little bit over our budget, and our 2022 budget is a little more aggressive than when we came in at 2021, but nothing, I think, to be concerned about. In terms of building permits and fees, you can see that both plumbing and building permits came in well above the original estimates. And although you cannot quite see the end, you can see the combination of both. Year-to-date 2021 was 182,000. It may increase slightly depending on whether there are any chargebacks, which would be work that was done in December that we don't receive the receipts for until January. That's what's considered a chargeback because that's technically the prior year's revenue. And you can tell from the cut off 2022 budget column that we budgeted approximately 160,000 for those two combined. So again, that's looking like a pretty reasonable number. And, oh, this is a mess. I apologize. I might have to pay money for an actual real word processor. Sales tax contribution, we've talked about this before. It's been very strong this year. We're at almost 1.2 million. That's only 2 out of the 4 quarters versus a budget of 1.7. What you can't see in the column is that our 2022 budget estimate was 2.3 million. So that's actually quite aggressive, but it does not look out of place at this point, given what our 2021 experience has been so far. Mortgage tax, we definitely did quite well on this year. And if I remember correctly, our mortgage tax estimate was not incredibly aggressive. And then lodging tax, we're still working on that. There's sort of a delayed ability to track that information because we don't really get it until the filings, and the filings are quarterly. So we actually will not know our total lodging tax revenue until basically March, because the March filing includes 2 months of 2021 revenue. But it's looking pretty strong right now versus budget. And I do recall that the 2022 budget, I believe, was also 300,000. So that's also looking pretty good. So overall, I think that the revenues have come in as well, if not better than we expected for 2021, with a few exceptions. I think the positives are outweighing the negatives at this point. So I think 2021 is looking pretty good. 2022, we did have some aggressive revenue assumptions in the budget, but so far there is nothing to indicate that they are not reasonable. And that's pretty much what I have.
Thank you, Heather. Hand up. Theo, you have a question. Unmute yourself. There you go.
Hey, can you hear me all right? My video is pretty bad.
Yep.
Hey, everyone. I just had a quick question for Heather. I was wondering if the new financial software was the MooneyRev software that we had mentioned in the previous meeting. And if I know the way it was left in the last meeting was that there would be a reach out to the software developers to make sure that they were able to provide the services that the city needed. I just wanted to see what the status of that was. So thanks.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to reach out to Muni. It's MuniRevs. The people that we're dealing with are actually the existing software company that we have, and they are actually, and we will, obviously, because we would have to do that in any case for any kind of competitive bidding. But the numbers that I'm referencing now are basically the evolution of the current software company that we have, and the current software company that we have offers several components that many other software companies have not been able to offer to us, including quarterly tax billing and installment agreements. And for those of you who don't know, an installment agreement is if somebody's delinquent on their taxes, the ability to roll all those taxes into a payment plan so that they don't end up in foreclosure. So those are the kinds of things we're looking at. Many of you probably don't know this because you're new. My office has been substantially understaffed for quite some time now, so we're unfortunately quite behind in a lot of things. So I hope to put this back on the hot plate once we get an operational office back in place. I would also like to take this time to make the offer to any council people, new or old, if they would like to spend any time, if they're interested in trying to get a better understanding of the city budget or the finances or, you know, the financial statements, the audited financial statements, the balance sheet, things like that, I would be more than happy either in a group or one-on-one to try and make that time with you. So.
Thank you, Heather.
Heather, what's the best way to reach out to you? Just by the city? Sorry, Tom. I cut you off.
That's right.
Probably the best way would be sending me an email. It's citytreasurer@cityofhudson.org.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Taking you up on the offer, Treasurer Campbell. Thank you.
Great. I love it.
Any other council members have questions or comments? Anyone from the public? Okay. Thank you, Heather. Let's move on to who said that? Chief Moore.
Greetings, everybody. I start off with a mandatory reporting that came from the Park Committee. The first report that I have for the month is the number of the use of force incidents that we had last month, of which there were none. Because of that, there was no duty to intervene in incidents. The department made 30 arrests with a total of 53 charges. The other good news is that our calls for emotionally disturbed people was way down to only 3 for the month. Which for a couple reasons, we know that a couple of people that were repeat callers are under treatment right now. And also the other good news is we only had one complaint of an overdose or situation of a drug overdose that person survived. Narcan was not administered and wasn't needed. So those are good numbers for the month. Also, the mandated quarterly vehicle and traffic report, which breaks down our traffic tickets by race. We saw for the quarter, which goes from October 1st to the end of the year, of the traffic tickets issued by Hudson Police Department, 81.6 of the traffic tickets were issued to people identified as Caucasian, 11.8% African-American, 3.9% Asian, 2.6% other. So that breakdown, oh, by the way, these reports are all going to be, we don't have everyone's email loaded in yet, but I've sent them to the council president, to the mayor for distribution for all of your review. There's nothing noteworthy or unusual about that traffic or report that would raise any particular concerns, but you can each review them. Also has a breakdown on what tickets were written and where. Highest concentration of tickets were on Warren Street, and for some reason, coming in second place was South 6th Street. A little recap of December's activity for the department. On December 3rd, our command staff completed a three-day conference, the Summit of Use of Force, which was attended by 900 police officials, where we went over legal the latest legal issues involving policies and the use of force while effecting arrests. So very timely and useful conference. On December 4th, of course, we had Winter Walk, which was safe and a successful event. There were no criminal incidents throughout the Winter Walk until the last 20 minutes before closing, where a 14-year-old suffered a broken leg after being assaulted by another juvenile. And that case is currently under investigation. On December 7th, we demoed speed radar devices and signage for potential use in the boulevards to calm traffic up there. And that was attended by the alders, Dewan, Vicky, Dominic, and President DiPietro. On December 9th, ShopRite donated 5 pickup loads of hand sanitizer, wipes, and soap, which is available to all members of the community. We posted that on our Facebook page, and we can also certainly supply other city employees with quite a large supply of hand sanitizer as we go through this next portion of the pandemic. Throughout December, we conducted interviews from the civil service list to fill 2 openings at the police department. One candidate so far has passed all standards and will be attending the academy in Schenectady starting on January 24. Our PBA distributed a lot of toys. Thinking about a PBR. Our PBA distributed a lot of toys over the holiday season. On December 17th, the PBA supplied gifts for 10 needy families in the city of Hudson. On December 22nd, gifts were given to the Rock Solid Church to coincide with the food drive event they were hosting. They raised $4,000 through the No Shave November project. It was donated to the residents of Jackson County, Arkansas, affected by a tornado that destroyed their county on December 11th. Lastly, the IBR, which we call the incident-based reporting, is something I'm always interested in. Everyone's interested at the end of the year. Basically, all the year's crime statistics are coming in and being sorted, and I will supply at some point a report for everyone at this meeting. But the preliminary indications are very good for our city. I highlighted instances where crime was down at least 10%, more often at least 20%, that too includes simple assaults, burglaries, DWIs, drug and narcotics violations, larcenies, simple assaults, and weapon violations. So those are key important criminal categories that are all trending down for our city, which is good news. The only incidences that showed an upswing were disorderly conduct and vandalism. And the news about the vandalism that was tied to a widespread instance of graffiti, which an arrest was made on December 4th that accounts for a good portion of the graffiti. I would say all in all, some good indicators about crime in your city, and everything's going well over here at the police department. We've made it through without losing any patrol strength despite the pandemic. We've been able to staff accordingly and without much harm, was to stay within our budget, which of course we've done again. We're very proud of that, to be able to come through and not have to ask for additional money. So that's the report, Mr. President. Ready for any questions?
Thank you, Chief. Any council members have questions? Vicki.
Yes. So with the temperatures going down so much, I was wondering where are the warming stations currently, and how do the homeless people get informed of where they are?
Okay, so the code blue will be broadcasted if we have a code blue situation, and the locations for warming stations will be announced. Also, has been the practice of the department for many years is when the temperature gets down particularly low, our patrols will go throughout the city, and that's the advantage of having a smaller city, to check for homeless people and people without shelter, and we'll bring them to the appropriate warming stations. So we have a pretty good record of finding people during our most severe weather. And luckily, like I reported before, some of our homelessness, especially around the park, has been helped this last month because certain people were able to actually get treatment and they're safe now from the elements.
Any other council members? Questions for the chief? Public, anybody from the public? Okay. Oh, Malachi, you go first.
Chief, how you doing?
Good, Malachi.
Just the number of warming stations. What are those numbers? How many the areas? I should ask.
We generally use the central firehouse. In a couple instances in the past, we've actually brought them to the station here. But we'll get a lot of information out should any be set up. But in a couple instances already this winter, we have brought people to the station and called the appropriate agencies to help them out and find them shelter.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Malachi. Next up, before you ask your question, well, he took his hand down. Never mind. I guess that's it then. Well, another hand went back up. Look, before you ask your questions, Bill, let me remind you, you were banned from the last meeting for inappropriate commentary. So please try to keep your questions precise, short, and accept the answers that you were given. With that, okay. Bill, please ask your questions.
Okay. Sometimes I just want some clarification time, that's all. Chief, I'm wondering, and this is a question I guess I'd like to ask of all department heads, are all HPD officers required to be vaccinated against the coronavirus?
No, Bill.
They're not. Okay. And just one last question or comment. I'm just wondering why the HPD and you deal with the parking permits, or what I recall is dumpster permits. You know, for those people that want to park a dumpster in a city street. Why is HPD dealing with that? Any idea? I mean, it doesn't seem like a law enforcement thing to be wasting your time on, or spending your time on.
It's just the way that the current laws are set up. The permits, you know, between tradesmen's permits.
Why is it with you guys and not with DPW?
You know, I guess we're the enforcement edge. We would be the ones to actually go check the dumpsters or lifts or construction trailers to make sure they're properly permitted.
Okay, well, that leads to my next question is, on the permit, as you know, it says that anybody who wants to place a dumpster in the street, a must, M-U-S-T, put barricades or lights for safety purposes around the dumpsters. I've never seen one dumpster in the city of Hudson, the 7 years I've been here, have a barricade or lights around it. And I'm wondering why it says that in the permit, and are you enforcing that?
We've generally allowed them to put cones by the dumpsters to warn oncoming traffic.
So if they don't put cones around the dumpsters, do you do anything about it? Do you enforce it?
We found that the cones worked effectively. Yes, we haven't had a car hit a dumpster yet in the last 10 years.
Okay, but it doesn't say anything about cones in the permit.
Okay, Bill, move on. Do you have any other questions, Bill?
I just want to make a last comment.
Okay.
This is basically to everybody, and Chief can comment if you like. HPD issues 2-week permits for dumpsters on the street, $25 for the first 2 weeks, $10 for the second week. Somebody can park a dumpster on Warren Street covering two parking meters, parking meter spaces. It'll cost them 70 cents a day to do so at $10 for 2 weeks. And I think that's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, 70 cents gets
you
1 hour of meter time. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Okay, Malachi, did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if this is actually for the chief or if this would be for DPW. But I'm just going back to, I think Bill had brought it up also about the crosswalks. You know, I just think that it's essential and it's very necessary for us to repaint those crosswalks, especially the one that had the head start on 540 Columbia Street. And my question is, with it being repaved, could it be a different color? I mean, with it being repainted, could it be a brighter color? A coworker of mine was suggested maybe a brighter color for the trucks that come down because of the Head Start program. And if they can have just a brighter, you know, something of view so it can be during the winter time with the snow, it's hard to see. And so I think with something with reflective, or even like I was talking about before, you know, the lights or something that can just get the attention of the truckers better. And, you know, I just think that crosswalk is very dangerous. Because it's just a lack of just visible things for people to see and know what's what. Would that be for you, Chief, or would that be for DPW?
I know that the color and type of paint that goes down is regulated. Now, what I think you're getting at is, you know, how often they can be refreshed once they wear down and you can't see them anymore, like the white striping on the side of the road or the yellow striping for the crosswalk. I think that's more of a maintenance issue, but I think that the color of the paint and the type of paint and everything is all regulated by the Department of Transportation.
Couldn't that be considered as a sort of like an emergency situation as well?
I think it has to do more with money, Malachi. I think it has to do with how much you've got budgeted for painting and the money to put the striping down and the type of, I'm not an expert on when you can put them down. Like, is it too cold to do it now? And will it not last? These are the kind of things probably Rob Perry would know more about than I, but, you know, I think you bring up a good point that once the striping wears down, the situation becomes less safe.
Ryan, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I'll just add to it. Malachi, it's the same type of paint that they use for the curbing And Rob has said before that it's typically in the mid to late spring, because to the chief's point, it is temperature related that allows it to cure properly so that it doesn't wear off. So I would say if there's anything that we want to get ahead of for crosswalks and curb painting, we try to get together as alders to make a list that we can get to DPW in February so they can plan accordingly for, like, you know, April timeframe or so.
Maya, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I would actually like to add to Malachi's concern that this is a Head Start program. Very young children in the city of Hudson and their families crossing the street that is a heavily used truck route. And even those lights that have gone up in different parts of the city could be a really appropriate thing to have there to just ensure safe crossing for people who walk a little slower than the rest of us sometimes, and ensure that they're safe.
Thank you, Maya.
Thank you. Thank you.
And with that, if there's nothing left for the chief.
Yeah.
Oh.
Nope.
That's, I had a quick comment for the DiPietro.
Oh, go ahead.
I wonder if anyone has looked at for that Head Start area. Is it feasible to have those mini speed bumps that many places have? That kind of, you know, doesn't necessarily slow it down, but it makes drivers aware that there's something coming up.
Ronnie, we've had the speed bump question. Well discussed. And
okay.
Let me raise it again when we switch to Rob Perry within seconds if no one has anything more for the chief. Okay, thank you, chief.
I just wanted to say quickly, welcome to everybody, all the new alders, and I look forward to working with everybody. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, chief. And with that, we'll move to Rob. And Ronnie, keep that question in mind, because I'm sure Rob will be happy to respond to it once again.
I didn't know that.
We're laughing, Ronnie, only because we've really gone over it quite a bit. But it's worth bringing up time and again.
I had a feeling that it was something that triggered it.
Excuse me.
Good question, buddy.
Yep. Rob, let's see. Rob, yeah, he's here. Rob, are you ready for your presentation?
I am trying to
share your screen.
Can you see my screen?
Yeah.
You don't see anybody, but there's no documents there, right?
Correct.
I'm going to try and find this PDF. Hold on.
I can have Shaheen post it.
Well, it should be able to resolve itself pretty quickly.
Okay.
I'm just like, it's a Mac. I don't know how to use Macs. I don't know.
There you go.
Okay. And how do I make it bigger? Okay, good?
Good.
Okay.
Good enough.
All right, let's go. So with the sewer department, and just since there's so many new people, just a brief overview. When we say Department of Public Works, there's really four major departments. There's the water department, which is raw water from out in the country, comes in filtered through a $10 million plant, and it goes out into the system. There's a sewer department. We have 20 miles of collection mains, water and storm water. There's a goes to a 12. There's three pump stations. There's a $12.5 million sewer plant. There's the cemetery, which is up in the cemetery. It has its own operations going on there, and it's and then there's DPW. So when I start the meeting, I start with the sewer department first. Each of the sewer department has its own fund, its own budget. So it's responsible when everybody gets a water and sewer bill. A portion of that water and sewer bill is what funds the sewer operations. Taxpayer property taxes do not go to either the water or the sewer department. It is wholly from their own revenues, one being the water and sewer bills. And in the case of the sewer department, there is septage revenue, which is private haulers bringing in septage waste from outside in the community. outside of, you know, throughout the rest of the county and so forth, and they offload. It's permitted by DEC, and we process it. So this adds about, it's about 1% additional flow annually, and it's about 25% of our revenue. So it's pretty good business. So for the month of November, it's $45,000. We budgeted $415,000, I believe, and I believe we should exceed that revenue line item. Also important to say, sewer money cannot be used for anything other than sewer. So if you want to use it for crosswalks or daycare or anything like that, it's no es posible. Okay, so going forward with some grants, we have an environmental planning grant that was awarded last year. That's still being reviewed for contracts up at the state. That's basically the model portions of the sewer system, you know, for the hydraulics and so forth. And we do have a Front Street stormwater project that was originally, we had a grant in 2014. When we went to construction a couple of years later, there was only enough money for a portion of the project. So we reapplied for another grant we were awarded in 2019, but that still didn't cover the cost. And so last December, as in last month, we were awarded a $1.4 million water quality improvement grant. So between that and the CBG grant, we have $2.1 million to finally get that project completed. And that's taking the combined sewer main on Front Street and turning it into one dedicated storm and one dedicated sanitary line. Part of the process was getting extension from Office of Community Renewal. So this is just the extension letter. This is a $750,000 grant, which is 100% reimbursable. The $1.4 million grant that we have is 40% state, 60% local, I believe. And that local share also comes out of the sewer fund, not other general fund. And this is the water quality improvement. Just the listing from, I don't have the award letter yet, so it's the $1.4 million. Let's see if I can get this. I don't even dare touch it. I really don't. So we had some for the water department. Just to give you an idea, you know, our water main is literally out in the country. It goes out, starts way out by Lake Taconic. So, you know, we had some fluctuations in flow. So this blue line is actually two of the water operators humping it out through the country in and around the bogs and around, little, this is a pond here, tracing out the water main to see if there's any visible issues. And so this portion here, this is the reservoir right here. So they started out Reservoir Road Extension over to County Route 12. And then, and this is the rest of it from the green is County Route 12, moving on to Stickles Road. And this is out in, the first portion is out in Churchtown. This portion here is in Clawbrick. We did have a water break, which this time of year, as it gets very cold out, what happens is the frost goes down on the ground and it actually snaps the water main like a pretzel. And so you get this perfectly round break and the water sprays out. In that case, you just put a little repair sleeve on it and button it up and then backfill and everything's back to order. Another capital project for this year is the 500 block of Washington Street. We have a WIA, which is a water improvement grant, as well as a lead service line replacement grant. Two of them are about $1 million. So that project is actually, the bid is on the street. We have a pre-conference, one January 13th, and bid opening January 26th. That construction is expected to start in the spring. Just down at the DPW garage, you know, we have this old barricade shed with a dirt floor, and the roof was leaking, and the walls were failing, and so you can see these old beams here are half rotted. So we went and poured a new floor. We then went and we had some materials from previous years, but we had to demolish the old one. And so they've started constructing the new shed. And, you know, what we do is each year we try and get some materials for these because we try not to pay for it all at once. So, you know, 85% of materials were purchased over prior years just in storage. But now we're complete and ready to move on. The, you know, just a couple of DPW things. You know, there's a box rail, you know, things that we have in the yard maintenance. This time of year, we're not mowing any lawns. And if we're not doing a whole lot of snow, you know, we try and do some other things. So this was actually a rail that was put together to go at the bottom of end of Spring Street to keep people from going off the edge of that road. As many are aware, you know, we shifted to a two-day recycling. We were 2 days of recycling forever, up until 5 years ago when the county moved to a single stream. Then we were able to commingle plastic and glass and paper. But before COVID, we were averaging about 6 tons of recycling a week. Now we're doing about 12 tons, and it was just too much of a burden. The crew was unable to complete it in one day, so we're back. So if your garbage day is Monday, your recycling day is Wednesday. If your garbage day is Tuesday, your recycling day is Thursday. It's very binary, pretty straightforward. We did include this in all the water and sewer bills, so the 2,400 notices went out to citizens. It's also been on the city's website. So anybody who says they didn't know is really not making an attempt to stay in contact with the city, because we do get real emergencies more than just a recycling change. So it's, I recommend that you tell your constituents to recommend to them that they should sign up for notifications from the city website. Just some more work, Promenade Hill, you know, these, there were 4 ash trees that were, you know, destroyed by the ash borer. So they asked us as part of our in-kind service, take them down, which we did. So this is really terrible looking at sideways like this. Is there a way to turn this page without losing it? Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know Mac.
You should just be able to go into view and then rotate if it's a PDF. In the top left, you should be able to go to view and rotate clockwise or counterclockwise.
I'm in some kind of viewer. I don't know what I'm in. I'm not even.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, so I, you know, I guess there was some discussion about, you know, parks and park commissions and park this and park that. So I just wanted to give everybody a summary of what the parks involve. So here's a list of the 23 properties that, you know, that our parks department manages. And, you know, this was part of a report I did for Commissioner and the Mayor last year or the year before, I can't remember. Anyway, you've got 4 properties that are pretty big and open, the waterfront, Dunn Warehouse. You know, that's a zero turn a riding mower can do. There's about 24 properties, or about half of them, you know, really push mowers and weed whackers. And then you've got a bunch of them that are basically by hand. So in all, you've got 20... You know, we got about 35 properties. The total amount of area is about 22 acres. Like I said, most of these require hand mowing. We do have, you know, this is literally like cut and paste from this year's budget. And I can't turn this or make it bigger. But anyways, this year's budget for the parks is $145,000. That includes that's salaries for 2 full-time and 1 part-time. Their duties are mowing, you know, the hedges, shoveling in the winter, doing any kind of soil or sod work, you know, facility maintenance, because we do have, you know, well, there are some fountains. There's also the comfort station down at the waterfront park. The equipment is $2,000, and that's basically push mowers and leaf blowers. Materials and supplies, you know, is, I think it's $10,000. That's topsoil, fuel. You know, we have a lot of these parks have, the ones in yellow have energy bills, because they either have fountains, the waterfront has a comfort station. So that's, you know, that's what that is, power and energy. So, you know, when it all comes down to it, there's really, you know, they do have a vehicle that was a hand-me-down from the sheriff's, it was a hand-me-down to the mayor's, it was a hand-me-down to the senior center that came to parks, and, you know, it's got a rotted frame, so that's going out. You know, so this is just a quick once-over for the discussion. But the reality is there's really, you know, it's everybody's, as I like to say, it's 1% of my budget. It's less than 3% of the combined budget of water, sewer, cemetery, and it's 30% of my headache. So, trust me, if they want to put parks somewhere else, I'll hand them the keys tomorrow, because it's just, you know, it's purely basic maintenance. There's no, you know, there's nothing else funded to pay for anything else, so that's the name of the game. All right, I think I can stop sharing now. That's the end. Okay.
Oh, that's it, Rob?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. There's Ferry Street Bridge. Bid documents will be going out in the spring. We're hopeful for construction starting in the summer. And you'll have some transfer resolutions for year-end stuff for next week. And there's, I don't know if Heather talked about the common energy thing, but she'll take care of the resolution for the shortfalls there. But yeah, that's all I got.
Okay. Council members, any questions? Vicky. Yeah. Vicky had her hand up. Go ahead, Vicky. You're muted.
Hi, Rob. So my question is, is the city planning to replace some of the lead pipes, and are there federal money for that? I'm not sure what's the situation.
It's state money. We have $500,000. The first phase is replacing those lead services as part of the Washington Street, because we're going to put a whole new water main in, and the road's going to be opened up. That should take about 30 of them. There'll be money for another 25 or 30 afterwards, and so we'll open it up citywide. We'll have to come up with some kind of a lottery system or whatever, but that won't be until 2023.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
Vicky. Malachi, you're next.
Yeah. I'm just going to go back to what I was talking about. I know the chief and Ryan already touched base on about the paint of the crosswalks, particularly talking about at 540 Columbia Street, Columbia Opportunities walkway. Rob, just with the, I just want full confirmation with the timing of when the paint can be put down for the crosswalk.
Malachi, see, this is a perfect, I couldn't have come up with a better first meeting discussion, because this is what happens with crosswalks. Everybody loves crosswalks. We want the most, and so they're pretty expensive. The thermoplastic paint that goes down, it's a high density resin. We actually melts into the street. It's got reflective beads in it. It's a primo product. It's also an expensive product. So every time, the problem is that every time somebody adds crosswalks, that leaves less funding and less supplies to maintain the existing ones. So at some point, we got to come up with a long-term solution that says for every crosswalk that we put down, we have to agree to fund it for the next 10, 15, whatever, 20 years. Because the reality is they are a wear item. A sign goes in the ground and it's probably pretty good for 50 years. Crosswalks do not last that long. Sometimes depending on the road and the traffic volume and whether it's near a corner or not, it can last a couple of years. It might only last 1 year. So the issue with that specific one is, other crosswalks were added. And so the materials that were dedicated to that crosswalk went to another one. So the good news, Malachi, is you guys are in charge of the money. So all you got to do is find more money and we'll put down more crosswalks.
All right. Other question too, and I don't know if this pertains to you or the chief, with the electric speed, what is it? Speed signs?
Yeah, whatever. If you guys got money for it, I'll go buy it for you. They're like $6,000-$7,000.
Well, currently right now, we have the speed sign down on, where's the Harry Howard?
Yeah, Dominic got a grant for that.
Okay, that's specifically for that?
Yeah, Dominic, he's got his act together.
Okay. So you're saying I don't have my act together?
No, I'm saying talk to Dominic. He's your boy.
No, I'm kidding.
He's got the playbook, man.
All right.
Okay, Margaret. You need to unmute yourself.
Yes, okay. Sorry about that. At the very beginning of your presentation, you were going through it rather quickly, and I couldn't jot down exactly what the extension was for. There's a letter from the state granting an extension through January 31st, 2022.
Yeah, you'll have a copy of that. What happens is everything that gets submitted to the thing, it becomes a communication.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that. In the text of the letter, as I was reading it, I didn't have it ahead of time. It said, basically under no condition will extensions beyond January 31st, 2022 be considered.
That's what they always say.
I don't know what the project is, and I don't know what your estimate is for whether you're going to meet that deadline?
Listen, that's a form letter. The same letter that we got the extension on had the exact same language. And every time we ask for an extension, they send us a letter with the same. I've done this with two other projects for this agency. It's their form letter. They say, we'll never give you an extension. And then you ask for one and they give you one.
Okay. And what exactly is that project? Because you went through it.
That's the stormwater separation project down on Front Street between Columbia.
And when do you expect that would be finished?
Well, it'll be finished. We'll put it out to bid in another month or two, and hopefully it should be finished in the late summer, early fall.
And when you asked for an extension, did you ask for one through January 2022, or did you ask for a reasonable extension?
We only asked for the extension because the award for the water quality improvement had not been made by the governor. And if we did not win that grant, then we were not going to have the appropriate funding. And the first grant, the CBG one, which that letter is about, would have just sunset. It would have, we would have let it go. But we were issued, so we asked for that extension to wait for the governor to make her announcement, and she didn't make her announcement, and so now we'll be sending a second extension request with the fact that we have the funding to do this project, and we're ready to go out to, the design is done, we're ready to go to bid shortly, and we're optimistic that they'll give us the extension.
And so that extension request will go out this month?
It'll go out, yeah, it has to go out this month.
Okay.
Thank you, Margaret. Any other questions?
Yeah, I got one more. Okay. Rony, don't want to ask it.
Okay.
But Dewan actually offered to fill me in, so if it's something that's been previously discussed, I'll save everybody else's time.
Yeah, I created a whole packet for this discussion last year. I'll just email you the packet. And then if you
I appreciate that, Rob. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Rob.
Way to pick on the new guy, Malachi.
Peter Bujano is here. Do you have anything to add?
Good question, man.
Peter?
Yes. Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all the new older persons and all the returning older persons. Look forward to working with you and the Common Council. So we have a few resolutions coming up for the formal meeting that haven't been prepared yet. Some of you may be aware, one of the projects that I'm managing is the 400 State Street, which is the old former library feasibility study. The funding for that request for proposals, we issued a request for proposals. We met as a committee, we shortlisted two firms, we interviewed two firms, and we selected a firm, which the contract is being prepared by me now, and there will be a resolution to award that contract for the next meeting. I just want to make you aware of that. And that's the money that was granted to the city in the tune of $100,000 from the Galvan Foundation. So that's coming up. There's another resolution that I expect to have ready for you. My apologies that they're not ready for tonight. The City Hall upgrade project where we're incorporating ADA accessibility to a lift on the right-hand side of the building. That project is going out to bid. We're expecting it to go out either late this month or early February. So we'll probably want a resolution to get that on the street, put that out to bid. It's a great project that's been going on for quite a while. I'm excited to get it going. Hopefully we get some good responses and we get some good contractors to move that forward. I just want to also make you aware that there's the parking study, Empire State Development contract was signed. I'll be delivering that personally this week to Troy, to Empire State Development. And that parking feasibility study document will be going out to prospective consultants later this week. And Tom, I don't know if you want to mention the Dunn Warehouse RFP. I can let you have that.
Sure, I hope so.
And that's pretty much what I have. I do have some discussion with the council, but I'll do it offline regarding the Fairview and Green intersection improvements and the cost to do that. But that's something maybe we can discuss. And based on what Heather said earlier, the ARPA funding, perhaps we can talk about maybe moving some of those funds to incorporate the safety improvements on that intersection. The bid documents are ready. We just are hesitant because we have some estimated costs that are in excess of the value of the dollars that were granted to the city by Stewart's. Stewart's granted the city $200,000 that partially funded the architect engineer to develop the biddable documents. Creighton Manning is the company, the consultant that was prepared those. We're ready to go with that, but we're just a little hesitant because we know that the estimated costs are in excess. So we need to reach out to anyone who may provide us with some additional funding for that. And I was going to follow up on the ARPA question, whether we could get some funding for that. But Tom, if you want to talk about the Dunn Warehouse RFP?
Tonight, you mean?
No, I mean, that's something we're going to issue the... we're going to do a resolution to issue that next week.
Correct.
So there's a request for proposals for the Dunn Warehouse, and that resolution will be forthcoming as well for next week. And the document is complete, and Tom will distribute that as well.
Right. And I just want to make clear, we'll have all those documents up and posted in ample time before the next meeting, following the new state regulations. Thank you, Peter.
Great, thank you.
Excuse me. Next up, we have... okay, once again, before we go on, Bill, please, let's keep it to two questions with follow-ups.
Okay, I have three questions, so if they're short, we go for three, right, Tom? Okay, Rob... as I asked the chief, do you and all your DPW employees need to be, are you required to be vaccinated for coronavirus?
Bill, I'm sad to say that Rob seems to have left the meeting.
Really? Accidentally?
I can't account for his behavior.
Well, call him up.
No.
Yeah, he doesn't show up beforehand, and he leaves as soon as possible.
Okay, well, that's not...
the only one.
Okay, Bill, I'm sorry. Maybe you should put those questions into an email. Thank you. So moving along, what we do have tonight is an extra report from the mayor, with the mayoral aide, who's here in another capacity. He's also our ADA advisor. I'm sorry, our ADA
coordinator.
Sorry. And Michael, go ahead.
Thank you. Michael Hoffman. DiPietro. Yeah. Hi, everyone. So good to see you tonight. And of course, welcome to all of the new faces in the council. I'm going to just share my screen briefly here so that I can go over a new report for you. This is not a typical part of the informal council meetings, but I am happy to issue regular reporting on our status with ADA compliance issues within the city of Hudson. I wanted to take this time specifically to go over the settlement agreement that the city of Hudson reached with the U.S. Department of Justice in October 2019. This document is kind of an basically serves as the city's goalposts for being able to reach compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act across basically all city buildings, property, and programs as well. I'll try and move through this quickly. I've been here for quite a long time. The settlement is basically, I view it in terms of two categories. We have general items, which includes the naming of the ADA coordinator, notification of the ADA, grievance procedure, effective communication, and the independent licensed architect that the city engaged with, and then facilities issues regarding sidewalks, public parks, and municipal buildings. For the first item, the ADA coordinator needs to be appointed for any public entity that employs 50 or more persons. Michael Shimides was the first ADA coordinator appointed in January 2020, and I took his place when he left
the position. Both of us have completed ADA Title II tutorials provided by the ADA National Network, and I am continuing to seek additional training specific to issues related to the issues that we see here in Hudson. In terms of the notification, Hudson did adopt an ADA notice soon after the settlement was reached and published it to the registrar, posted it on our website, and also posted it in public buildings. We will probably be issuing an update of that notice because it does list Michael Shimides as the coordinator. So we'll want to update that with new contact information and additional ADA information. And most of the information I'm presenting tonight is also available at the city's webpage under cityofhudson.org/ADA. Our grievance procedure was adopted also very shortly after the settlement was reached, and grievances can be submitted to myself directly in writing, or you can request an alternative means of filing your complaint with me. The city also hosts an online form to report sidewalk and curb ramp issues. And then the procedure, which is you can read in detail online, also under the ADA section of the city website, outlines the timeline that the coordinator or my designee has to meet with the complainant and respond and allow for an appeal of any decisions that myself and the mayor make. In terms of effective communication, the city does hold a contract with Language Line, which provides on-demand translator services, including video remote interpreting services for American Sign Language interpretations. So I will make sure that any new council members are able to access that information if you do come in contact with someone who you need us translator services for. This is available to any city employee to use. I also maintain a list of local interpreters if you do need someone in person for any reason. The city issued an RFP in March 2020 to maintain an independent licensed architect. That initially selected architect was not approved by DOJ, so we went back with another RFP that July, and after selecting from that round, they approved Hyman Hayes Associates as the City of Hudson independent licensed architect. Shortly after that October, ILA commenced with a sidewalk audit, which was the primary reason to have that contract. And that was completed and sent to the Department of Justice in February 2021 and is also accessible for anyone who wants to read it. It is, that brings us to our facilities. Parts of the settlement regarding sidewalks, the sidewalk audit is 270 pages. It's quite a long read, but it is a very comprehensive review of 10 areas of sidewalk that serve as the core pathway to public facilities in the city, and also includes compliance checklists for over 100 curb ramps, other ramps and stairs within these areas. The Hudson Connect portion of the Downtown Revitalization Initiative grant and the Ferry Street Bridge renovation will resolve compliance issues for about 2.5 of these evaluation areas, but that still leaves a large amount of the city that with significant issues. And some other spot improvements have been made through Chip Street repairs recently, but the city has been struggling to implement programmatic efforts due to both financial and staffing constraints. So I'll be absolutely coming to the council for recommendations and ideas of how we can make some programmatic and wide-scale efforts to amend the sidewalk issues that we have throughout the city. In terms of public parks, the settlement names Henry Hudson Waterfront Park and the Promenade Hill Park with several issues. Most of the issues in the Waterfront Park were resolved in the spring and summer of 2021, including updates to the restroom facilities and accessible picnic table areas. The Promenade Hill Park, as many of you know, is also part of the DRI project, so construction is ongoing to ensure ADA compliance there, and the projected reopening is in spring 2022. And we've been in contact with DOJ as that project progresses, providing updates and making sure that everything is up to code. In terms of municipal buildings, the first one is City Hall. As Commissioner Bourgeois Noted earlier, we hired Lacey O'Reilly Wilson, LDRW, to study and propose ADA improvements for City Hall. And the city decided to move forward with renovations to make the building's entrance and first floor fully ADA compliant. So the city finalized a contract with LTRW in September to develop biddable construction documents. And as Peter mentioned, those will be finalized and published either later this month or in early February. The at the same time, as Peter also mentioned, the feasibility study will be going out soon for the adaptive reuse of Horn State Street, and that'll be underway this year. The settlement also listed the youth department building, specifically mainly that there's no accessible route to the only basketball court located on the second level, which also only has steps to get to that second level. But at the time, this remedy is demonstrated to be a serious hardship to the city and is currently a low priority for getting to. But I think that it is important to keep in mind as we move forward and continue with these projects. And then the last municipal building listed is the Oakdale Beach House. Effectively, the entire building is inaccessible and in very, very poor condition. So I made a site visit in September to discuss the scope of the work. And in December, just last month, the Common Council authorized the issuance of an RFP for a feasibility study on renovations to the Beach House to meet ADA standards. So we'll be seeking council reapproval of this budget amendment for this budget year in 2022 and to also publish an RFP coming up. And so that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Council members, any questions? Vicky.
Hi, how are you doing? So my question is, I was wondering if you know what is the percentage of the sidewalks that they have been, the city sidewalks that have been repaired so far?
I don't have an exact number percentage, but I would say that it is, I can count on my hands basically the number that have been improved year to year. So it remains a very significant issue that we need to tackle together.
Okay.
Dominic.
Thank you, Tom. Michael, I want to thank you for that very in-depth report. I think it covers a lot of areas. I think also, you know, I get some phone calls, and I think we have to have individuals and residents understand that, you know, ADA compliant, the settlement is basically city properties, because I think there is a perception out there that it's all sidewalks that are part of the settlement. So I think that you know, it's important that we identify that, you know, these are owned or, you know, city properties or city access sidewalks. It's not residential sidewalks, correct?
Right. So the settlement specifically seeks to have Hudson correct issues that make a barrier to access to city services. So as was studied by the independent architects, they focus specifically on the parts of the sidewalks that connect people to various public places. So from the waterfront to Promenade Hill Park, all down Warren Street, so that you get City Hall, down to the courthouse building on 4th, and then up to Oakdale on 6th Street, and also down to the police center on 7th. So it is very specifically about solving those sidewalk issues so that people can have access to city services.
And I'll reach out to you. I think I might have some other resources for you for some training through Cornell.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ronnie, you're up next.
Apologies in advance if this is another issue that's been resolved previously, but I guess it's a question both for the council and for Michael. With the sidewalk issue, it seems like a huge issue to tackle. I remember there was a Register-Star article talking about how the city, I might be misinformed, but I know that there was a city code that actually provisions, or allows the city to, like, repair sidewalks that are not repaired by the property owner and then bill them for it. Obviously, the property owners are given enough notice and opportunity to do themselves. But is that something that's been looked at in order to
yes.
try to get more compliance?
Yes. What we were trying to do the past 2 or 3 years is to come up with a system that would avoid that means of going about repairing sidewalks, because it was felt that a number of citizens couldn't afford what that would cost right away. Let me offline, let me bring, because I can't really go into full depth given my voice, but we will bring this back up. We were trying to come up with a system similar to Ithaca's where we would have a pool of money that would allow for sidewalks to be repaired throughout the city under one contract. In the meantime, that other method still exists, and we could choose to enforce it.
It's totally understandable to be concerned about citizens who can't pay for it. So right. Yeah, we'll discuss about this offline. Thank you.
Yeah, no, we'll revive that committee in the upcoming month.
Yeah, I'll also say that there are quite a few other options to explore as well. I actually just received an email from a constituent who shared an article about what's happening in California, where they're considering legislation that requires homeowners who sell their properties to fix any sidewalk issues before finalizing a sale. So Hudson could consider something like that. It wouldn't be an immediate change. But it could help kind of systematize it so that whenever property changes hands, you know, we fix those sidewalks.
Art, did you mean to, okay. Okay, Bill. Okay. It doesn't seem to, it took down his hand. Any other questions?
I'm on.
Oh.
Right here?
Sorry. Yeah.
Michael, I want to make one comment, if I could, and a question for you. I read a good part of the agreement between the city and the DOJ, and it sounds like if the sidewalks and the curb ramps that need replacing are to be replaced, it's going to be on the shoulders of the property owners, as you've said. And I did some Googling around, and there's all these other cases throughout the country where the DOJ has come into agreements with other cities like Los Angeles, Portland, Oregon, Allentown, Pennsylvania, and basically said curb ramps are not the requirement of property owners. They are the, since they're a common feature, everybody uses them, just like the sidewalks, the cities are liable. And Los Angeles, you know, $14 billion or millions in Portland here. Why is that any different? Why is it different here in Hudson? Why are you putting the burden on the property owners? Specifically, I want to talk about curb ramps, but I could say sidewalks as well.
I don't think that we're necessarily saying that we are putting the curb ramp responsibility on citizens. But I think because the way that the code is set up currently for Hudson, there is a responsibility for property owners to maintain the sidewalks in front of and adjacent to their properties.
So your approach is going to be, if you're going to get these necessary changes to sidewalks and curb ramps, you're going to approach homeowners. So what department are you talking to? Are you talking to DPW about getting this done? I mean, you're not going to do it yourself, go knock on homeowners' doors and tell them to replace their sidewalk and curb ramps. Who's going to do it?
It's going to require definitely a collaboration between the mayor's office, the DPW office, and the code enforcement office. And we may have to also consider hiring additional staff in order to get this done, because it is such a large and widespread issue that we're going to need additional staff to really get this done and to get it done correctly.
And October is the deadline this coming year, is that correct?
The deadline for reaching compliance?
It's 3 years from the signing, which was 2019, correct? October 2019, you got 3 years?
Right. Well, we are going to be continuing to demonstrate progress, and that is really what DOJ is interested in seeing. I don't think that they expect the entire city to be fully sidewalk compliant, but we are definitely working towards that goal.
Last question. Have you involved Rob Perry with this at all yet?
Yes, Rob is, of course, involved.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Michael Hoffman. Oh, Vicky, did you
have I'm really sorry, quick question.
Sure.
I was wondering if we can get an extension on all those deadlines because of COVID. And, I mean, we use this excuse of COVID every, department around here in this world. So I was wondering if we can use it for this one, too, because it's a legitimate.
Yeah, I completely agree, Vicky. And I'm in regular contact with our lawyer at DOJ. So I'll definitely be advocating for us to get an extension, and I think they'd be very reasonable with that.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. There's not much left officially for tonight's meeting. We have four resolutions, and they should go pretty quickly. Shaheen, can I have the first resolution, please? Here we go. Okay, this is a simple Commission of Deeds resolution. Can I have an introduction, please?
Duan.
Second, Ryan.
Okay, Duan and Ryan. Thank you. The next resolution. This is reappointing the four listed members of the Conservation Advisory Council. Can I
introduce?
Whoa.
But everybody introduces. Yeah.
One at a time. Who would like to introduce?
I'll introduce.
Okay, I heard Margaret first. Who else?
Yeah, I've been in touch with these members. I would like to introduce them.
Okay, second?
I'll second.
Oh, that's Ronnie. Okay, thank you.
I think that was Art.
Oh, that was Art. Sorry, when the resolutions are up, I can't see everybody. The third resolution, I will give the honor of introducing to Vicky, since this was something she managed to bring about. This is an This is to accept a donation from the Pocketbook Factory Hudson to purchase and install solar equipment. Can I have an introduction?
Duan.
Thank you, Vicky. And Duan is the second. And the last resolution, by the way, in case you weren't here earlier, Vicky was responsible for that donation. And the two traffic, one is a permanent one and one is a movable radar, traffic radar that'll be going on different spots on Glenwood Boulevard, which is one of the three or four spots that we have identified as in desperate need of traffic calming.
Yeah, and I'd like to thank the Pocketbook Factory for doing this donation. These are problematic areas, and with the two big projects that are going to be building down the road, the situation will exacerbate. So I really feel it will be very helpful to complement the new speed limit of 25 miles per hour, and it will be a good traffic calming measure that if it's proven successful, we can probably adopt in other parts problematic areas in the city.
And it inspires me, since my street is one of the streets that needs it.
All right.
So the last resolution authorizes the renewal of a senior citizen property tax disability exemption. Do I have an introduction? Duan. A second?
I'll second.
Who was that?
Art.
Thank you, Art. Okay, that's all our official work for tonight. Council members, any new business you'd like to raise? Our attorney's been here all evening. Maybe have something we can actually, I hate to say use her for, but, you know, ask her if you have questions.
I'd like to get, okay, go ahead.
I'm not sure who that is.
I just wanted to know about you.
Okay, I have no idea what you said, Dewan. Because it's, I think if you turn off your video, we can hear you better. But in the meantime, Dominic Maranti would like to speak.
Thanks, Tom. I do want to also congratulate Spiky on the work on getting the funding. Obviously, this was something she was working on, and to get this.
Dominic, you're having microphone problems, but okay. We seem to be handicapped tonight with all kinds of internet problems, but
well, thank you, Dominic, wherever you are.
Can you hear me, Tom?
Yes, a little bit better.
Okay, thank you. Status of filling the vacancy on the third ward, what's the process moving forward in securing a seat there? I understand there's some movement, and so I'm looking at the time frame on what it looks like for the new council on filling that spot.
Okay,
you got an answer?
Oh, you're that's a question. I had a hard time hearing you, sorry. Yes, we will be acting on that in the immediate future, which is to say probably next meeting.
So, Tom, at the moment, the one person that I'm aware of who has put forward is Amber. Are there any other individuals?
There are not. And let me say at this point in time, if anyone from the third ward would like to be also considered for a council position, I'd recommend you do it pretty quickly, because otherwise, there's only one other applicant. So that's where we are. Malachi.
And
Tom. Sorry.
Just wanted to.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just follow. Well, go ahead with Malachi, because it's an unrelated, it's a different question.
Okie doke. Malachi.
And I'm not sure if my question is, again, for the chief or DPW, but coming up on North 4th Street, I'm thinking it's a very dangerous spot going on to State Street, and I've been saying this for a long time. I've been thinking it a long time, but now I want some action for it. But maybe if we can put up a no right on red sign up there, because that's a very dangerous location.
Well,
if we would need to conduct the study.
I don't know about that.
Traffic study for that, or
in the past there was a no turn on red sign there, which was taken down after the school closed. But we can easily bring that up with the chief. In fact, okay. I'll ask him. He's not here. Any other councilmen? I'm sorry, council members.
Yes, Tom, I want to come back.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yes. So we touched on this because it's no longer in the rules situation. So what is the process going to be with regard to establishing committees and so forth? Can you explain to us what that is?
Yes. Next meeting, I will announce the committees and who's on them.
And how do you determine who will be on those committees?
By deciding it. The way it's always been done.
Do you ask for any input?
Not really.
Okay. My other thing is just informational for the other council members.
Mm-hmm.
I have reached out to NICOM, which is the Conference of Mayors, New York Conference of Mayors, They have a lot of training programs and gathering information on that. I will send an email to everyone. I think there are some really useful, it's a very useful resource, and there's some very interesting trainings, particularly since so many of us are new to the council, and to some of us are new to city government or to government in general. And I think it'll be really helpful if, you know, if I get some interest that are, we have people who are interested in participating, I'd be happy to coordinate that, but I will be sending you all an email relating to that.
Great. ICOM's a very valuable resource. Ronnie.
This is just a follow-up to Margaret's comment regarding ICOM training. Unfortunately, all those trainings fall right in the middle of my workday. So if there are council members that are taking those, and if they're willing to share some of their notes, you know, just like back in the college days, I'd really appreciate it.
In fact, Ronnie, anybody who participates gets a video of it afterwards, so they can share that video.
Same with Ronnie.
One of the things I was looking at, because I also have a day job, one of the things I was looking at was if we have sufficient interest. I reached out to them to see if they would be willing to do a webinar or something, that if, you know, if we have a group of people who have an interest in a topic, that they may have a resource where they would be willing to schedule something with us, perhaps over a weekend or in the evening. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm going with it, because I see exactly what you're talking about.
Excellent. Thank you, Margaret.
I'd also be happy to share my notes, Ronnie. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Good. It's all good news. Anyone in the public?
Duan,
yes.
Yeah, I'd like to hear a little bit from our new attorney, Crystal.
Okay, do you have a specific question?
No, just the, you know, introduce herself, you know, stuff like that. That's
okay, sure.
Sure, that's not a problem. I am a partner with the firm Bailey Johnson & Peck. We are located up in Albany, New York. I've been working with municipalities, whether it's boards or councils, legislative bodies like you, planning and zoning boards for about 15 years now. I have a strong background in litigation, actually, for municipalities, as well as advising town boards, city councils, and that sort of thing on just, you know, legislative procedure, Article 78 actions, generally pretty much anything that covers municipal work. I've done a lot of sewer and water work, actually, up here in the town of Colony for the last 14 years now. So my experience is fairly broad when it comes to municipal work, and I'm more than happy to field any questions that the council members have as they're going about their legislative business.
Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you very much, Crystal. To back up a second, Margaret, in your question about committees, I should make it clear that the reason I interviewed everyone before the year began was to try to understand your strengths and your interests in order to make committee appointments. I may have sounded a little bit...
that's interesting, because I don't recall in our one-hour discussion you asking me anything about what committees I might be
in. No, that's not what I said. I said I was interested in what you were interested in, and that feeds into how I decide committees. Okay, Bill, do you have a question?
Yes, am I here? I'm here. No question. I'd just like to make a comment that what everybody witnessed tonight with Rob Perry was classic Rob, arrogant Rob Perry.
Okay, we're not going to, Bill, we're not going to have, out. We're not going to have. Out.
I can, you won't, I can't criticize, Tom?
Not really, because not a city.
You don't allow criticism, is that correct, Tom?
Not of city employees, no.
Never.
I didn't say
not
that.
A bad word to say about them.
Okay, let's move along. Anybody else? Okay, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
A second?
Duan.
second.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Who?
Aye.
I think we got some extra ayes there. Anyone opposed? Aye. Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.
Good night. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.